So we're on Canto 3, Chapter 11, Calculation of Time from the Atom. Texts 15, 16, and 17, which is on the board. So I'll just read through 15 and 16, and then I'll do 17. Yasrija shaktim rudoch vasayan svasak shakja pumso brahmaya dividavati bhutabeda kalakyaya gunamayam kratubir vitanvams tasmai balim harata vatsara panchakaya. Translation: O Vidura, the sun enlivens all living entities with his unlimited heat and light. He diminishes the duration of life of all living entities in order to release them from their illusion of material attachment. And he enlarges the path of evolution to the heavenly kingdom. He thus moves in the firmament with great velocity, and therefore everyone should worship him, should offer him respects once every 5 years, with all ingredients of worship. Text 16. Vidura uvacha pitri deva manusyanam ayu param idam smitam parisham gatim achaksva yesu kalpad bahirvada vida. Translation. Vidura said, I now understand the life durations of the residents of the Pita planets and heavenly planets, as well as that of human beings. Now kindly inform me of the durations of life of those greatly learned living entities who are beyond the range of a kalpa. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The partial dissolution of the universe that takes place at the end of Brahma's day does not affect all of the planetary systems. The planets of the highly learned living entities like the sages Sanak and Bhrigu are not affected by the dissolutions of the millenniums. All the planets are of different types, and each is controlled by a different Kala Chakra, or schedule of eternal time. The time of the Earth planet is not applicable to other more elevated planets. Therefore, Vidura herein inquires about the duration of life on other planets. Text 17. Bhagavan Veda Kalasya Gatim Bhagavato Nanu Vishvam Bichakshate Dira Yogaradena Chakshusha Bhagavan, O spiritually powerful one. Veda, you know, Kalasya, of the eternal time, Gatim, movements, Bhagavata, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nanu, as a matter of course, Visvam, the whole universe, Vichakshate, see, Dhiraha, those who are self-realized, Yogaradena, by dint of mystic vision, Chakshusha, by the eyes. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. O spiritually powerful one, you can understand the movements of eternal time, which is the controlling form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because you are a self-realized person, you can see everything by the power of mystic vision. Please repeat, O spiritually powerful one. You can understand the movements of eternal time, which is the controlling form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because you are a self-realized person, you can see everything by the power of mystic vision. Purport. Those who have reached the highest perfectional stage of mystic power and can see everything in the past, present and future are called tri-kala gyan. Similarly, the devotees of the Lord can see everything clearly that is in the revealed scriptures. The devotees of Lord Sri Krishna can very easily understand the science of Krishna as well as the situation of the material and spiritual creations without difficulty. Devotees do not have to endeavour for any yoga siddhi or perfection of mystic powers. They are competent to understand everything by the grace of the Lord who is sitting in everyone's heart. Okay. So this is all about time. And in the previous purport there, Prabhupada mentions there about kala chakras, or wheels of time, cycles of time. So how to understand time is very difficult. Some philosophers think it's objective, and some think it's subjective. Objective is like Newton. He actually conceived of time as being a kind of a dimension in which other things are situated. In other words, time isn't of itself something. Exactly what, he couldn't describe, but he felt that it was an objective kind of reality and that it therefore affected other things. Then there are other philosophers who think that it's subjective, Kant, Leibniz and others, and they think that it's simply an intellectual measurement, that time itself is not actually something. But it is simply the way that with one's intellect we observe movements around us using a relative point. So we may use ourself, or we may use other objects that we see, and then by observing the movement between them, then we call that time. So which is, because these seem to be opposing opinions, objective or subjective, so what is it? That's the big question. Stephen Hawking, he measures time by what he thinks is the beginning of the universe, the Big Bang. Other physicists also, they like that idea. That at the occurrence of the Big Bang, then time began. Yeah, because then there's some substance and movement. And that's that time-space continuum. That you can't understand time except by the fact of its containment within space. Yeah? Within space there are so many things. And if you don't have a reference point of space, there's no way to understand time. Which is kind of sensible. So his idea is that before the Big Bang, which was the creation of space, yeah, or the appearance of space, if you like, there was only what they call a point of singularity, which is so infinitesimally small that you can't measure it, and it has no attributes. There's no space within it, and therefore there's no time, and therefore there can't be any attributes. But nevertheless, they have to accept that there is a point of origin, which they call a point of singularity, which nobody actually knows what it is. But something must be there, because everybody knows something can't come from nothing, literally. If you have nothing, then where do you get something? So if there's something, there was always something. Now, what shape or form that may take, how it's manifested, or even unmanifested, that's the great debate. What is it? Yeah. So anyway, people are speculating about time. I found some interesting information on the Wikipedia. Does anybody know what a second is? It's very interesting. Because we measure, because our general units of time, we measure a second. And in the Bhagavatam also it's mentioned that the smallest unit of time is the movement of the sun over an atom. Interestingly enough, science also has a very similar definition. And according to the way that the atomic clock, which is supposed to be now the most refined method of defining time. 9,192,631,770 cycles of the radiation, which corresponds to the transition between two electron spin energy levels of the ground state of the cesium-133 atom, that constitutes a second. In other words, they're taking an extremely small object, a cesium-133 atom, and of course you can't see it because it's so small, so they measure the radiation that comes from it, and by the difference or the change in the radiation according to the spin cycles, then they count it, and they say that the difference, or the so-called time, the movement from one state of radiation to another, that constitutes a period of time called the second. Constitutes a cycle, a 9 billion something or another million cycle. And when you add all those up together, you get a second. So in that way, there's a point of reference. Otherwise, you can't understand time. So that's subjective. So at the same time, we're told that time is the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not exist within space. So, how to understand the two? And we see in these verses here, Vidura is asking, well, what about the Kala Chakra on the higher planets? What about that for human beings and other planets in the universe? So that seems to be a subjective analysis, and at the same time is admitting that time is the controlling form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is outside of space. So the answer in the Bhagavatam as to what time is that it's both. It's objective and subjective. Because objectively, ultimately, the controlling factor of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Time is not a mere measurement, as some philosophers would have us believe, that just by observing the movements of different objects relative to a certain fixed point, or a so-called fixed point, any point, arbitrary point that you want to take, that constitutes time. And aside from that, there is no real time. That's one argument. In the material world, you could say that that's true, because in the ultimate issue, what is real? Yeah. If you're measuring everything up against everything else, then you need a fixed point to get to, you know, a final conclusion of what time actually is. Yeah, time is movement. So if you have a fixed point, then you can get to an absolute time. But in the material world, there are no fixed points. Everything is manifest and unmanifest. The whole universe is manifest and unmanifest, and therefore there are no fixed points within it. And yet it must come from somewhere. So how it is manifest, and then where does it go when it's unmanifest, that must be the point of fixation. That must be the absolute point. So that's explained in the Bhagavatam. That's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah, we're talking about creation here. And how everything is coming out from and then winding up within, you know, a certain entity. Yeah, Lord Vishnu. Of course, the whole universe has come from Mahavishnu. They come out at a certain point, they go back in. And the same, you know, within the universe, then Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, everything comes out from his navel. When there are dissolutions, everything goes back inside his body. And then again they come out. So that's the fixed point. And at the same time, for living in the universe, then you need a relative measure, if you like, to understand how things are working. So therefore Vidura is asking about life on the other planetary systems, knowing that they have a different measure of time. And he wants to know how the great sages measure things. So those that are on the highest planetary systems, it's mentioned here, then their conception of time, their duration, their movement is completely different from living beings in the lower spheres of the universe, because they're not affected by these partial winding up or annihilations that go on at the end of the day of Brahma. They stay aloof from that, and therefore their observation of everything is somewhat different. They have a different point of reference. Now, it's mentioned that they're greatly learned living beings. That would indicate that they understand that when they observe a dissolution going on, they observe how all the living entities that are involved in that are actually entering back into their point of origin, which is Lord Vishnu. So they're not bamboozled by time in the same way that we are, although they're within an enclosed space of the universe. They also have their duration. Lord Brahma also has his duration. He has a measure of when he first appeared and when he'll have to leave. He has a measure of, you know, the manifestation of the universe and the cycles that it's going through. So some measurement is possible, and at the same time it's impossible. Because if you go outside of the universe, where's your point of reference? So from our point of view, then time is both subjective and objective. It's subjective in terms of our own existence within these bodies, which we take as our point of reference. Yeah, we're in this body, we measure how this body is changing, and we take that, you know, a lifetime, a lifespan, a kala chakra, if you like. That's our point of reference, and then we see everything outside of us in reference to our own bodies, our own, what we think is a fixed position. The only problem with that, of course, is that the body's not fixed, and therefore we lose our point of reference, and then you become bewildered. Without a point of reference, there's no way to understand what you actually are. That's the difficulty. If you don't have a point of reference, how can you understand anything? So if we use a point of reference, which is our own bodies, and these bodies, you know, changing very rapidly from one state to another, and in reference to other bodies also, then that means that your point of reference for understanding yourself is rapidly changing as well. And that's what we experience. Although we repeatedly say, I am this. But what this is always changing. And therefore, we become bewildered as to what I am. I am this. But what is this? If this is changing, the I then must also change. Unless this doesn't change. In which case, then you can understand yourself, the I. So spiritual life is all about understanding that which does not change, in order to understand the self. You must come to that point, otherwise it's not possible to actually understand what we are. So, in meditation, they have this saying, be here now, or be there now. Meditate on the now. The now being that which is in between the past and the future. The example's given of the Turnus, Sam Turnus? Huh? A timer. What do they call that? Too many people calling it. Anyway, it's shaped like this and like that. Right? And you put sand in the top and it dribbles through the bottom one grain at a time. So the top is the future. The bottom is the past, and the point of entry, that's the present, one grain at a time. And you measure how time is moving like that, and how your life is moving in relationship to that. So, life itself exists in the present, not in the future, not in the past. It only exists in the present, and capturing the present and understanding what the present is, that is the whole process of yoga. Or meditation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, he says, forget the past that sleeps, in the future dream not at all. but act in times that are with thee, and progress you shall call. So what is the progress? What is the progress? That progress means the progress from illusion to reality. Getting out of bewilderment of understanding what you are. So, if we meditate, or if we come to the point, to the point of the present, and only the present, it's at that point when the future doesn't exist, the past doesn't exist, there's only the present. That's when you find yourself. That's the idea. So when you meditate, you have to meditate to that point where there's only the now and nothing else. That's eternality. That means that you've discovered the soul, because the soul doesn't change. Everything else changes. All the different elements of the universe, they're all in movement. But the fixed point is the soul, the Atma. And when you can meditate on yourself as a soul, then you come to the eternal platform. And then you see yourself in relationship to the Supreme Eternal, Krishna. That's your fixed point. Then there's no bewilderment or confusion anymore. There are no more dissolutions, there are no more creations. You go beyond that and you come to a state of actual reality where there's only the present and there's nothing else existing. But still in the Bhagavatam it's mentioning about the calculation of time from the atom. So this is a relative. So the Bhagavatam also accepts the influence of time within the relative sphere of activity that we call the material universe. Time exists both ways, objectively and subjectively. When you're in the universe, you're shut off from the ultimate objective reality of Krishna. And that means that you can only understand Krishna's presence by inference. Just like the scientists, they understand this movement 1 second, they make the calculation by the inference, the radiation that comes off from the atom that they can't actually see. So in the same way, by inference, we understand the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even when we can't see Him. In the material world, that's the only way that you can understand Him. You don't see Him directly, so you have to understand Him by His influence. So His influence is time. That's the primary influence of the Personality of Godhead, the Supreme. Supreme means nothing above, nothing equal to. Yeah? It means everything else is subordinate. So there's only one thing that everything is subordinate to in the material world, and that's time. So that's God. Therefore, Prabhupada said, even an atheist has to bow down to God at the time of his death. Yeah? Time. When you die, that's it, you're finished. All your activities are gone, all your nonsense is all finished. So even if you don't like to bow down to God, you know, within this lifetime, recognizing His existence and accepting His supremacy and your subordination, still you'll have to bow down to Him in another way when death comes and boots you out from the what you thought was your fixed position and puts you in another position. Movement, just going here and there throughout the universe. But that controlling factor is the Supreme Personality of Godhead for everyone, whether you regard time as being subjective or objective. Because for a devotee, time is objective because it's Krishna. And everything that a devotee does is in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And of course, all of that, all of what that entails, that if you're in relationship with the Supreme Lord, then the whole question about, you know, desire and pleasure, love, exchange, all these different things, they come into being. Rasa. Yeah. And in the material world, without that objective sense of reality, then you are subdued by the impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord, or controlled by the impersonal feature of the Lord as time. So just like Hawking and his clever physicist, you know, friends. They can speculate all they want, but what's the purpose of the speculation? Writing so many books about the Big Bang and the development of the universe and everything that flows from it. But what is the purpose of that? Why are you even bothering to look at that? What do you gain from it? In a few years, you'll be dead, like everybody else. You know, Stephen Hawking will be dead, just the same as any beggar on the street will also be dead. So what did he gain from all of his mental speculation if he remains within the relative focus of time? He doesn't gain anything. Yeah, he might get a bit of temporary name and fame. Yeah, people glorify him, oh, he's such a big brain. You know, he's analyzed things in this way and that way. But what's the practical gain? Nothing. He's dead and everybody else is dead. Nobody gets any benefit. So if we want to actually analyze these things, we should do it in such a way that we get a real profit. Progress ye shall call. That's the progress that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking about. Forget about the past, you know, looking at the origins of the universe, inspecting the stars and the, you know, the atoms and, you know, the macro and the microcosmic, and trying to understand how things, you know, all developed, looking at the history of the universe or the beginning, you know, through the Hubble telescope, you'll see the beginnings of the universe. Big deal. In a few moments, you're going to be dead. That's all. It doesn't help you to know about that stuff, and nor does it help you to try to speculate about what's coming. You don't know what's coming. It could be anything. Yeah? You don't see what's in the past, and you don't see what's in the future. It's not possible. And what's in the future, of course, well, you can get a little glimpse or you can make some speculations about it, but the fact is that at any moment something unexpected could happen. You can, you know, make your activities with a view to the future. You make a plan. Yeah, I'll work in this way, I'll, you know, manipulate my money this way, whatever. You make a plan, but you can't guarantee that that's going to fructify. Anything could happen in the meantime, you know, when you set out on your endeavor to achieve a certain goal, but you don't know what's going to come in from left field or right field and knock you off course. Yeah. So, therefore, the advice is don't dream about the future. You know, working so hard for a future, making a good future for yourself. This is what they tell all the school kids. Yeah, you've got to have a good future for yourself. But what is that future? It's just disease, old age, and death. That's all. Nothing else. Everybody ends up the same way. So what is the progress? Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the progress is only now. Whatever you're doing right now. And whether it has any intrinsic value or not. So anything that is relative, that means anything that is measured against the movements of other material bodies within the space that we call the universe, is a waste of time. That's all. You're wasting your time if you work in a relative way. The only way that you can capture time and get a benefit from it is to find that point which is fixed. The real point of singularity, beyond time. Yeah, the eternal point, and then work in relationship to that, always, at every moment. Don't have any other point of reference other than that one fixed point. Then you're living in the present, and you don't have to worry about the past or the future. You simply enjoy the reality of the present. So that comes then when we discover the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only at that point, when we understand God as the Supreme Person, do you actually get any real benefit from your activities, not otherwise. Yeah. Even the Mayavadis, because they try to get free from time, they get free from the universe, they don't identify with all those reference points that all the other conditioned souls, you know, take as reality. But still, because they don't have a reference point in the spiritual world, they don't have that reference point, and therefore they can't stay in that, you know, aloof position from the material world. They have to come back down again. because they don't have any way of expressing themselves, they don't have any way of acting. But the whole universe is based on the actions of living beings. What is all this relativity that we're talking about? What is space for? It's to accommodate. What is time for? It's to accommodate the nature of a living being, which is to be always active. So you can't get satisfaction from relative actions, and you can't get satisfaction from denying the relativity of action either. You can only get satisfaction from real actions. That only comes when you realize Bhagavan Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At that point, then everything becomes fully manifest. Yeah, all of your activity is expressed outside of time and space. So that's a very difficult concept for us, to see how things are expressed outside of time and space. We're so used, you know, to these points of reference, counting everything, you know, the seconds, minutes, hours, etc. But this is where we have to come to. So that's the meditation. Be there now. That's what it means. Find Krishna's lotus feet and fully take shelter. And therefore Prabhupada says that devotees do not have to endeavor for any kind of yogic siddhi or perfection in mystic powers. They are competent to understand everything by the grace of the Lord who is sitting within everyone's heart. That's meditation, seeing the Lord within the heart. And then everything else becomes clear. But without seeing Krishna, everything is obscure by time and space. All right, we'll finish at that point. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, that's real science. Prabhupada used to quote one of his teachers, I think Professor Urquhart at Scottish Churches College, that philosophy is the science of all sciences. In other words, science culminates in philosophy. Yeah? It's the mother of all sciences. And philosophy means, you know, coming to the point of understanding existence. Yeah, what one is, and the idea of God, understanding that. You can't get away from it. Hawking and people like that, they've tried to use science as a means of obscuring God. But you can't. He's found it impossible. The closest he's come is to just explaining or trying to explain how the material universe has no beginning and no end, and therefore there's no need for a God. Because if you accept God in his basic function as a creator, that means that there's a starting point, yeah, and there's an end point. So his argument in A Brief History of Time was that if you talk about a Big Bang, that means there's a starting point and there's this linear progression and then a folding up of the universe back into this point of singularity. And so you can argue that something caused the bang, and that something is God. So he said, in order to eliminate the existence of God, I've made a new theory by which there's simply time and everything just loops back into itself. So there's no beginning and there's no end. Yeah, there's just movement like this. So that's his idea. He wants to eliminate God. But he can't explain, of course, where the substance came from in the first place. Because for him, the universe is God, the material universe. Anyway, it's, you know, the scientists get bewildered. That's all, you know. They get caught up in all the minutiae of the universe, and they miss the bigger picture. But Newton, actually, he's considered one of the founding fathers, really, of modern science, right? But he was actually a firm believer in the existence of the Supreme Lord. And for him, science was just a way of understanding how God is working. It wasn't a way of eliminating God, but it was a way of actually understanding and appreciating more the existence of the Supreme Lord. So there is a debate, science versus religion, but there is a point at which religion and science do meet. And of course, as you were saying, Bhaktisri Rup Damodar Maharaj, that was his main focus in trying to show that. And the Bhagavatam is that stage on which the two meet. Here we have science, calculation of time, you know, through the atom. That's science. If you look at the statements of the Bhagavatam, you know, these are very deep and meaningful in a material sense. But at the same time, it also explains the role of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, as the support for all of that. So the Bhagavatam is the ultimate book of knowledge. It goes beyond, you know, religious sentiment, and it goes beyond materialistic science as well. It marries the two together. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Oh, the last one.
Bhagavan says that by the rising of the setting of the sun, everyone's lives are shortened, except those who live in Bhagavad Gita.
Yes. So, what's your point? The rising and the setting of the sun. And everybody's life is shortened except those who are engaged in Bhagavad Gita. But that's a relative statement in one sense, because nobody's life is shortened or lengthened, because everybody's eternal, if you look at it from that point of view. Yeah? So that's a point of reference. The rising and setting of the sun is a point of reference for people living in the material world, and not even just the material world, just where we live. Because when you're on the higher planetary systems, the sun doesn't rise or set. Right? It's only on the Bhumandal where you get the rising and setting of the sun. So that's a statement that was been formulated as a point of reference for human beings. Yeah, that's the Bhagavatam as we know it. But on the higher planets, there's a different kind of Bhagavatam. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have the same points of reference that we do. But you have to, because we're living, because we are conditioned and we don't have an absolute understanding, we have to be given some comparatives and some points of reference which are within our experience, our current experience. And therefore that example of the rising and setting of the sun is very relevant, because that's the, for us, that's the ultimate Kala Chakra, the wheel of time. But if you're living on the sun planet, there is no rising and setting of the sun. Yeah? So the Kala Chakra there, the way you measure time on the sun planet, is entirely different.
But this actually means that time is wasted if you're not engaging in time.
Yes.
So time is really important. So if you don't engage in Bhagavad Gita, then it's wasted.
Yeah. Okay, we'll finish the Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.